All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to say, Dominic, tonight will be a lot of fun on the head show. It is going with Kenna's restaurant guy and Dominic. Dominic, I'm stoked tonight. We finally get Troy on. We've been kind of just hoping that he was being able to make some time. He's a busy guy. And we have him on the show tonight. And then we have the another legend. We have two legends.
Two legends.
Well, we kind of add you in there. We kind of got three.
Well, yeah. Yeah, thanks, Jay.
Exactly. So we have a great show tonight.
The little hearts are supposed to be coming off my cheeks right now.
Yeah, remember we had Paul that was doing that? That was cool.
Yeah.
We're live tonight, obviously, on every platform there is, and also on TikTok. So hello to my TikTok followers. Hello. Thank you for joining us, as well as we're on LinkedIn Live. We are on Instagram Live, and we're going to have a great show tonight. Obviously, the rules of the show are a little bit different. First of all, it is not a podcast, Dominic.
It's not a podcast.
Don't even think it's a podcast.
I am close to a podcast.
Troy and Monty, you can't say the P word. We should actually make that a rule. I can see that's T-shirts.
Word, eh? You can't say it, but we say it about 47,000 times.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus it's, you know, it's the bottom
it's
third
not
of the screen.
A podcast. And on TikTok, I'm not going to invite all these other people to host the show with me. I'll decline all five. Thank you for joining us.
Some people offering to co-host.
Yeah,
that's so
nice.
Actually,
I should have probably done that. Think of it. Anyways, so thank you for so much around that. So the rules of tonight, we have a special guest on. Monty's back, and then we have Troy on from Pepper Lunch. And you know what? It's super exciting. And we use AI today. We're going to use AI into the show. We're going to get ChatGPT-4 to tell us what the topic is tonight. Mm-hmm. And we'll let our special guest, Troy, pick the topic. So we're going to bring them to the green room, let them introduce themselves. We're going to talk about all the great things that are happening in our industry in North America. Because the gentlemen in the green room right now are in the U.S. and we're way up here in Canada. And it should be a good show. These are always fun. They're always fun.
Yeah, they are fun.
I don't think I've ever fallen asleep, apparently. Still have to shake that. I fell asleep once. Troy, did you hear about that?
I did. I heard Sean giving you a lot of guff over it.
You do 1,500 shows and then you have one sleep in one. And that's
one
all
little nap. It's all it takes. One little nap.
And the best part is I can't remember who it was. I don't have time to go through all the shows, but
hey, at least you weren't flying a plane, driving a bus, all good.
It's close. It's close. Well, welcome, Troy. We are so excited to have you finally on the show.
Thank you.
And Monty, welcome back. It is awesome. I'm going to get you guys to introduce a little intro. Troy, you have a sick background. I creeped you a little bit. You're like massive, dude. Incredible. So taking your time today to spend with us is really appreciated.
Of course. Happy to be here. Glad to have it. Thanks for the intro.
So give us an insight. Give us a little bit about you. Let's hear about this. It's brag time.
You know, I've only been in restaurants about a quarter of as long as Monty's been in, but 32 years. So I know Monty's been around about 90-something years. But I'm currently the CEO of the holding company called Hot Palette America, which is a parent company of Pepper Lunch Restaurants. We have 513 restaurants in 15 countries around the world. We've got one up there in BC, Vancouver, and we've got one in Guam and five here in the continental, but we've got about 32 under development right now. So we're moving fast, growing fast, but we're a Japanese hot plate concept. So that's life today. Life is building the infrastructure, growing the brand, expanding the footprint of Pepper Lunch. And before that, I've just been a restaurant guy my whole life. Just been around it between being a chef and cooking and being a manager and a owner and an operator and a turnaround consulting guy. It's a little bit of everything, as most of us do in our career in this hospitality thing.
Cool. Welcome.
Wow. Welcome, man. I'm like, anytime I get to talk to people that's been through the weeds in a sense in the industry, because I'm assuming it hasn't been easy either, Trey, right?
No.
Exactly. Well,
that's why Monty looks the way he does. Monty's 42 years old. I don't know if you guys know
He's 20. He's
I'm actually 90, like Troy said.
Oh, you look good for 90, Monty. You look really good for 90.
Cheers. It's a bourbon. You know, I met a 100-year-old woman. I was running a restaurant in Nashville. And one of my employees said, you got to come meet this lady. She's 100 years old today. And so I went over and I thanked her for spending her 100th birthday with us. And she was really charming. And I sat down and started talking to her. I said, so what's the secret? And she said, I eat bacon and I drink bourbon. So
no, that's why you got.
I'm working on that.
Do you have a stick of candied bacon in that bourbon?
I don't, but
next time on, you do it, buddy.
I'll be right back. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Follow the lady's advice, my man.
Yeah. I did turn 60 last year.
I'm still blown away.
I am the oldest guy in the group.
Not by much.
I don't know what tonight is. First of all, say hi to Chip. Chip is on Instagram right now watching us. Chip post. Is on Instagram.
Hey, Chip.
And Paul Barron just emailed me too. And then Paul Barron just emailed me. He just came across my screen. So awesome stuff. I'm so glad everyone is connected in the industry. I absolutely love this industry. I love talking about everything in the industry. And I love being able to have some fun as well. So tonight's going to be a lot of fun. Troy, we're going to bring up the screen, the ChatGPT-4. I've already pre-prompted a little bit. I don't know if you know this, but apparently you have to say please now with AI.
Oh, yeah. ChatGPT gets an attitude, as I understand.
It has an attitude. So I'm going to bring it up on the screen here. And Dominic, are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm ready. There
you
go.
Are you ready?
Are we gonna zoom her up a little bit so they can.
There we go.
All right, so we're gonna bring it in a little bit closer because I don't like it's getting old.
I don't have my readers on, Jay.
I don't have his readers on. So give us three topics to talk about tonight, or talk about with Troy. Legend in the food service industry. Please make them different than we've had before, because we've been getting the same damn answers.
Pretty.
And
pretty.
I said, okay. So let's see.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Let's do a refresh.
No.
No, exactly.
Pretty.
There's that attitude.
There it goes. There you go.
Oh my God, Dominic.
Come on.
Is it the same three answers?
It's technology again.
Can you in front of Troy?
Ooh, I like Troy. Number three.
Oh, there
like
we
number
go.
Three?
I like number three. I like
Let's
all of them.
Let's do number three. Let's just do number three. Let's get right into number three. The cultural impact of global cuisine on local food markets. Is this Pepper Lunch?
It is. I think that's why it probably put it up there. Because it knows, you know, Troy and Pepper Lunch are now synonymous. So I'm thinking that's why it probably thought of it.
So I got to talk about this, because this is interesting how global cuisine right now, is it a part of the local food markets more and more? Are we getting away from like potatoes?
It is, but I'm in California, so I'm a little biased with my exposure, right? Like if you're in California, New York, these major markets, Miami, you're gonna see a lot of international cuisine, and moreover, we see a lot of fusion. Fusion's back. I don't know if everybody remembers fusion from the '90s. we all did fusion in the '90s, but yeah, it's back, and it's authentic, but it's interesting mixes. It's not like Asian American. It's gonna be like Asian Brazilian, interesting mixes of other countries. Like not everybody. The luster or the need to Americanize, and I say Americanize from a north of your border and our border, right? But that need to sort of whitewash Americanize things is thankfully gone. Gen Z and Alpha are all in on alternate cuisines and cultures, and it goes beyond food. Like food's sort of coming along for the ride. It's really actually more around gaming or art, animation, music. Culture, you know, full cultural immersion has really, really hit in a way that, and I think it's because millennials and Gen X traveled a lot and they're having kids and their kids are traveling with them now. So they're getting exposure, but whatever all the causations are, it's awesome. It's amazing for Pepper Lunch, but it's great because you're seeing a lot of cool stuff get brought to the market now.
And it probably helps that we have a phone in our face on social media.
Yeah.
3 hours.
It's as easy to interact with somebody on the other side of the planet as the person next door, right?
Absolutely. I think that's going to continue to grow. You think it's going to grow, Troy?
Yeah. When you see things like Twitch and international gaming competitions and, but again, back to movies and stuff. There's massive, massive platforms people aren't even talking about yet. That are growing in Asia and in other countries that are delivering content in a very bite-sized way. So the TikTokification of like comic books and short form anime and short form other forms of animation and shows, even live action film shows, that short form attention stuff is exploding around the world. And so now kids here in North America are getting exposed to it and, you know, mostly through their friends and stuff, you know, how it normally spreads. And they're getting exposed to cultures they would have never, ever, you know. I had to watch a documentary on PBS to learn about Mongolia. You know, now it's like I got a friend in Mongolia that I play video games with on Twitch. You know, it's like crazy how globalized the internet has made it.
What do you think, Monty?
Yeah, I think that from a fusion standpoint, it's really coming full circle. I'm seeing a lot of plays on egg rolls where I've got a client that's doing a Cuban egg roll, another one that's doing a Philly cheesesteak egg roll. And so there's some of it is Americanized to Troy's point. There is still a little bit of that, but you're seeing two other countries kind of. You know, you've got the Cuban sandwich from Cuba and the egg roll from Asia. So it's, I'm seeing a lot of that. And the egg roll seems to be a hot thing, right?
Fingers.
Because of the, possibly like the ease, the bite size part, like, you know, and the ability.
Economics.
Yeah, for sure. And the ability to switch up the flavors pretty quickly, right?
Yeah. It's fried, which people like, right? And yeah, I think that, having something that's, you know, fried food is always comfort food, but having just really cool flavors that you wouldn't expect to be in an egg roll show up in there is creating kind of a new twist on something that's kind of a comfort food. So it's new and, you know, recognizable.
Do you think Troy, or both of you, Troy and Monty, as do you see more of this? I'm going to say like the comeback of the fusion, this new infusion world. Are you going to see it into more QSRs? Do you think it's going to come back into the QSR model?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to. I mean, all things start at craft, right? So starts at fine dining, trickles down to casual, yeah. And ultimately finds its way. Yeah, I mean, you see the fast casual folks, I think, adopt this kind of stuff faster. You know, when you think of real true QSR or fast food, they tend to do it more gimmicky than anybody.
Yeah.
Give you an example, Panda Express down the street from my house now has an apple pie egg roll. Like they didn't have a dessert. So now they have a little chocolate cake, bundt cake thing. And they have the apple. That was new. I was really surprised to see that on the menu, but yeah, I think it's more authentic, obviously in the finer dining. And then I think fast casual tends to think about quality or authenticity or doing something, you know, well when they do it. So, yeah, but no, absolutely. You're going to see particularly Asians everywhere. Like there's a period. I know today we've all gotten used to it, but every steakhouse in America has sushi on the appetizer menu, period. Mm-hmm. Full stop. Can't go to a steakhouse that doesn't have sushi. And that actually annoys me because it's just not authentic. What does sushi have to do? Now, if you're doing a steak tartare sushi roll, hey, rock on. Now we're in the genre, right? Now we're playing in the same sandbox, but you're just doing sushi because sushi's popular. I don't think that's not on brand. If it's not in your cuisine type, it's not on brand. So
do you think that confuses the brand a lot? When you see that on the menus?
I do, but you know, in the US particularly, people don't care. People just
I was gonna say you guys have everything on the menu.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. One of the best things COVID and look, nothing great about COVID, but man, I was really happy to see everybody be forced to really shrink menu down to like the core. I think menus are worse today than they were 2019. Like, I think they're just bloated, and I just see people adding back, and it's like, do the math. Like, you know, yeah, you're hurting yourself. But
I just saw that same thing, Troy, and Technomics just came out with a new report showing that there was that increase in menus. It was coming back now. And people are just, and we see that. We see people with the, you know, the R&D and really starting to add a lot more to the menu. And I don't know if it's really trying to find those items that provide the value with the cost or a lower cost or trying whatever it is.
Getting against the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
They're trying to be everything to everybody. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, shotgun it and see what sticks.
Right? One guy comes in because I put this one, like, it's, yeah. And then on the other hand, everybody's woe is me about cost, right? Labor.
Yeah.
Well, most of your labor is in prep. Most of your food cost is in waste. Shrinkage that you're not really, nobody's actually measuring and tracking. So, you know, don't mention me until your menu's 9 items or less. I don't want to hear it.
Wow.
Well,
how many on Pepper Lunch? Huh? How many
restaurants can hit that? 9 items or less? Like, really?
Dave's Hot Chicken has 5. Raising Cane's has 3 or 4. Yeah. Biggest brand and one of the biggest, fastest growing corporate owned brands in the world, Raising Cane's. Wow. You know, we have 26. We're coming down to 21 here pretty soon. In Asia, we average 19 or so items on the menu. But we also do an express model version of our brand, which is 10 to 11 items.
Oh, wow.
Okay. That's the core, right? But that's for throughput, volume. Very, very 207 square foot stores doing 600 covers a day. So,
Wild.
Yeah, that's 3 wild. People, max 4. Yeah.
Wow. Yep. Good.
I'm a question here, Jay.
So Vancouver, where did you open, in Vancouver or Langley or something? I'm not sure. Where did you open?
Yeah, it's in Vancouver. So we've got one store in Vancouver.
Are we getting one in Alberta, Calgary?
Well, maybe if you help me find a multi-unit franchisee.
Well,
yeah.
There's lots. Pretty easy. All of our legal is done in Canada. We can start.
What is taxes in the country? Income taxes?
Yeah,
Alberta multi-unit. International franchise groups like to open in Alberta because, you know, the real estate's a little high, probably compared to a lot of places. But if you open in Vancouver, you know, you can open 3.
Yeah. You can open 3. Exactly.
Yeah. For us, it's a 2025 roadmap for us. We've got all our legal and trademarks and all that's been done. Really, we need the bandwidth to set up the supply chain. Supply chain is a real specific thing. Our products are all custom spec. They're all made for us. You know, everywhere we are, we set up a complete supply chain that's it's proprietary and dual. It's redundant, so we have dual suppliers for everything. And then there's a fair bit of stuff we bring in from Japan and Thailand. And
oh, really?
Yeah, not food ingredients, but smallwares, uniforms, some dry goods. Our rice is Japanese, which you can buy here, but it's a very specific rice. So yeah, we have a pretty pretty self-controlled supply chain.
Cool.
Well, Sean says the Troy and Monty sandwich.
Oh, great. That sounds something Sean's thought about late at night before.
Yeah. Sean, stop drinking.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Sean, Chip Close. Who else? What do we got? This is the...
Yeah, this is cool.
We got to get everyone on here. Do you imagine?
Hey, if I knew those were the people in the waiting room, man, you should have brought them up.
I know. I told him I could send them the link. Anyways.
I was going to say that I speak a lot about hyper-focused menus for a couple reasons. One, as a guest, I never liked going to a restaurant, and I'll just say it because they were famous for it, Cheesecake Factory, where I had to do so much work to figure out what I was going to eat. And when I, as a guest, go somewhere, I don't want to have to do the work. I want someone to walk me through some things. And I just felt like that was really too invasive of my time, right? The other, from a operator side, there's two reasons why I like a tighter menu. One is, you know, Troy mentioned prep. Think about this. Every time you prep an item, you pull the ingredients out, you grab what you need, you prep it, you label it, you date it, you put it away, you clean, you get the next thing out. And when you can create things in bulk and you're not constantly making 60 items a day, it's just a way less laborious process, and you save a lot of money on labor prep. When you've got a menu of 50, 60, 70 items, I have a client that's got 120 items, seriously, on his menu. He serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner all day long. And somehow it works for them. They're doing like $4.5 million, but he wants to scale. And I'm like, if we're going to scale, we got to scale it down. But the second reason why I really like it is because, let's say you have 60 items, okay, and you've got four stations. You've got, you know, fryer, or five stations, fryer, garmager, flat top, grill, you know, whatever, saute. That means you have 12 items on every station if they're properly distributed. And that's a lot for, you know, somebody to maintain. And so getting that line distribution of what items are coming off where, you've only got so many you can do off of a station. And so I'm a big fan of 20 to 25 items on a menu if it's not QSR. And, you know, if you feel like you've got to have more than that, and maybe you have an LTO with three or four more items that you can run for a month or two. And maybe that's just to kind of see if you want to swap them out for something already on the menu. But I don't like big menus.
Ask me how much prep we do.
That was going to be zero, probably.
Zero.
Wow. Really?
Zero. It's all.
Come on. We have zero prep hours.
You have a commissary that does it all?
We, not a commissary, all of it's direct from purveyor, direct from our meat house, direct from our salmon provider, direct from distributor, whatever. Everything is done to our spec for us at distributor level or production level. We don't even need a commissary. We're not slicing and dicing it ourselves. They're doing it for us on the production line. Yeah. And our food cost is under 25%.
No.
Nice. So, well, good for you.
That's solid.
By the way, can I ask? 80% of our ingredients is protein, and our food percents and our food cost is coming down. Actually, we're wow. probably going to get down 2 or 3 points here in the next couple months. So we'll be getting close to 20 before the year's out, and we're serving certified Angus beef, all Angus beef across the board. Really great salmon, fantastic shrimp. Awesome chicken. Like, I mean, it's just good stuff. And, but we have no prep hours. We spec it all and buy it in everything's vacuum packed individually. So it keeps, it's, you know, it's great.
Troy, can I ask you, the people that came up with that started Pepper Lunch, did they envision that from the beginning?
No,
they evolved to that.
It's evolved. So in Asia, they still actually slice all the meats fresh in the stores. We don't want that in the U.S. because of the added liability and our cost. Labor in Asia is $2.50 to $4 an hour. We're $20 an hour a month from tomorrow in L.A. So it's just a different business model requirement. They were really close here, really, really close here to zero. And so we came in and we kind of re-engineered a little bit and looked at workflow optimization and equipment. And we just talked to our vendors and we said, what's it add? Like, you know, and by the way, we were negotiating for national distribution and rapid scale. So we brought our cost down and then we reinvested those savings into, you know, and we're talking about pennies, like pennies per pound, pennies per case to do this for you. They're doing it on a production line. They're slicing our meats anyway. They may as well take four extra cuts and we're done, you know? So was it a simple operation in 30 years ago when they envisioned it? Has it become a more simplified operation with less prep over? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. In Asia, it's probably 10% of the prep you might consider most restaurants having. There's some, but it's not terrible. And here we're like keeping it zero. You walk in, the rice is already in the hopper. You walk in, you push a button, it dispenses. You push another button, it cooks. You're done. So, you know, we're just looking for efficiency everywhere we can because labor is so expensive.
And doesn't affect the quality at all.
No,
not at all.
Probably zero.
And we look, it's quality first. Exactly. And we have team members. Our quality assurance guy's been with the company 25 years, I think. Like, they fly in, they test everything, they inspect everything. Yeah, like they're not messing around. The Japanese are very serious about maintaining quality and standards and food safety and all these things. And so, no, as a matter of fact, quality has improved, but we've lost nothing by having it pre-sliced, diced, frozen, whatever, whatsoever. Yeah.
I love hearing those stories because you hear so many people. Do you think, so here's a question for you, because I was going to say, I do hear so many other people going the opposite way in today's world, thinking that they're going to save money. And when did that, like, you just, that just came with the franchise, right,
Troy? Like, yeah, that was well, just the mindset, yeah, the mindset came, and then we looked at it and just said, let's optimize one more, level. Let's just figure out. And here's what our goal was. Our goal was actually equally, how do we save those labor? But actually, I wanted the knives out of the restaurant. I don't want knives in this restaurant. There's no reason to have a knife. Ooh. So I don't want, because we promote and it's a big part of us, is that we're a no skilled labor environment. You don't have to have a prep cook, a line cook, any kind of culinary experience to work at Pepper Lunch. And so I don't want to teach knife skills. I don't want the liability of people not wearing cut gloves, all that fun stuff, right? So I was like, how do we get the knives out of the building? What do we actually have to cut, you know? And the goal has just been find every way possible to get keep the knife out of the building.
That's insane. That's
yeah, there's amazing. A lot of money in butchering too, because A, you got to pay a skilled laborer, and then you still have to maintain yield. And the reality is, to Troy's point, you're not really losing much in money. You're not. Even if you're a skilled person doing the butchering, you're really not going to save.
Well, by the way, nobody in store is going to ever be as efficient as the actual butcher we're buying it from. They know how to cut the meat to our specification, our size, our shape, our weight, and they know how to do it to maximize production and minimize waste. And then they resell the waste. So there's other things they can do with those scraps and waste and fat trim and all that stuff. Everything is sold. Nothing goes in a bin at a meat processor. Everything is finds a home. And that's how you save. They're able to make money on the waste, therefore subsidize your loss and keep, because if you just bring that in the house and you trim it yourself, slice it yourself, dice it yourself, you got inconsistency, you got food safety and labor safety issue. And then you're paying for what you're throwing in the bin because you're not reusing it. You're not finding a use for it.
So you must have zero waste then, Troy. Very little waste.
We have zero waste.
Yes. Shut up. No knives, then no waste. Zero waste.
No, what's really, I'll tell you what was a huge shocker learning about Pepper Lunch when I first started, was that our sales mix and our sales volume per item is like, you could take all 26 line items and they will never move. Like, we sell the exact same amount of everything every day. And I say every day, just take it on a quarter or semi-annual annual basis. At the end, it's flatlined. Like, we go up 3-5% a year in total sales, but nothing is ever like randomly like, oh, all of a sudden we sold a bunch of this today. Like, it just doesn't happen. That's where the waste elimination is that we don't have these massive fluctuations. Yeah. And
so you kind of know what each store is going to do.
Yes.
You know that one's
predictable.
Yeah,
really. That's cool. Do you offer limited, like, do you when you introduce something, you drop something because you want to keep that number at 22 or 26 or whatever your number is? Do you limited time offers or specials or any sort of feature items? And
yeah,
and
so
does that work in your system? It's going to be really hard, right? Because you got to go to the manufacturers, all of them, and bring in a special item.
Most people don't realize, you know, an independent operator or small group, can do specials on the fly based on, oh, we bought too much of this, or we have a bunch of that left over, we didn't sell as much of that as we usually do. They can flex like that. When you're a national, international brand, you can't. Everything has to be planned, and then you got to pray. And then, of course, you're making assumptions, and you're getting your purveyors to take that leap with you. So that's why LTOs, the margin on them, not in fast casual or large chain, LTOs, the margin is scary because you're buying something at a lower volume for a limited period of time, right? So we've, in the US, we've never done an LTO. They do LTOs in Asia. As a matter of fact, they pump out 5 to 6 LTOs a month, like easy, wow. like, you know, each region. So the regions will have one each, but they'll have 5 or 6 regions have an LTO every month, you know, where in the US a monthly LTO is pretty rare. We're going to do quarterly. We're going to do 4 this year. We're going to do our very first one by April 1st. I'm ecstatic. It's going to be so cool. It's so good. It's yakiniku steak. So it's a hanging steak done in a yakiniku triangle cut. It's going to be fantastic. Yeah. Like 5 or 6 slices of it. It's basically steak sushi at the end of the day. You're going to
saw this on TikTok.
Yeah. It's what you would put if you went to like a hot stone, a traditional Japanese hot stone restaurant, or a yakiniku. Like Gayukaku is a brand that's very large in the US and around the world. They have like 1,000 stores or something. That's the cut that you would cook with. It's essentially a really fine cut of, it's a sashimi grade cut of beef. So we're doing that as an LTO, first one we've ever done. But Dominic, to your point, like we have to tell all of our purveyors, we have to line it up. They have to order and plan and produce that cut. That cut's got to be in the stores. The stores have got to know how to build it, what the grammage is, what the total assembly looks like, blah, blah, blah. We have to shoot the content. Like on March 5th, we're shooting the photo for it to launch. Now, we're behind the 8 ball because we just started it. You know, we'll start working on the next LTO now. So, you know, in a month from now, we'll do a photo shoot for an LTO coming out 4 months from now. But once you get in that cadence, you're good. But same, like you got to figure out pricing. Portion, you got to get it loaded in the point of sale. You got to get promotional materials, social media posts. Like it's a lot of work to do an LTO. Of course, people don't realize that.
Yeah,
it's not a chalkboard on an A-frame out front says, you know, $4.99. You know, hanger steak today. It's a much bigger production.
One more question, then I'll let somebody else ask.
Awesome.
How do you do one store in Canada?
That's a lot of fun. Close enough
stuff from the US that can come up and, you know, because we have a pretty integrated system between Canada and the US. Is there a big challenge?
Ask me how I do Guam. I have one store in Guam.
By plane, I know. And by ship, right?
Yeah, by ship.
And what's the pricing like in Guam?
Higher. A lot higher. Yeah. Well, it's like Hawaii, right? Like we're getting ready to open a few stores in Hawaii and it's a whole different deal. Like it's just indexed to the market, right? Guam's funky because it's military, so they don't actually have a ton of money, so to speak, like but by per person per capita income. So they're, you know, that just costs are higher on Guam. Guam's just like Hawaii. Everything is shipped to the island. Hawaii at least can grow some fruits and veg, but not to the volume to support the population. But, So Canada, like, let me back up so everybody doesn't think Troy's nuts. Canada's been there for 6.5 years. Our private equity firm bought the brand in 2020. And brought us in exactly 13 months ago. There was some pre-existing stuff there, right? So the one in Vancouver, one in Guam. Guam's an amazing store. We're ecstatic about that. And they're opening a second one, hopefully by the end of the year. But the stores here in the US were all here. And so the first new store under the new ownership and new system and new leadership, we'll open about 5 new stores this year all over the US.
Wow.
So Troy, I know your model is kind of multi-unit franchising. Are you trying to target regional first? So you'll have multi-unit people in a targeted city area, and then you try to build around that. So you've got very tight knit, you know, control over distribution, or you're pretty much picking all over.
Yeah, no. So one is, we're a little funny this way because our pool of potential franchise candidates is much smaller than most, because we are only partnering with existing or recently experienced multi-unit operators. And they have to have an infrastructure and a team and resources, et cetera. We're really unique. We require them to pay all their fees up front. They have to open in about half the time of most brands that require. We do 5 stores in 3 years, 6 stores in, 10 stores in 6 years. So basically 2 a year. You have to open 2 stores a year. And so because of that, we can't be picky about where we go. But because of that, major markets tend to go first. So, you know, if we got a call from Fargo, North Dakota today, that would be pretty tough. We legally could sell them franchises. If you're going to open 5 in 2 or 3 years, it probably makes sense. We can probably convince distribution to support that. But you're right. Like, it has to be somewhat strategic. So it is major markets, right? We're going to open multiple stores in Phoenix, Arizona, Honolulu, Hawaii, in your neck of the woods, Monty. Not yet announced, but very soon to be announced what's happening in South Florida, Central South Florida there. But yeah, the Tampa Bay and Orlando region together as one. You know, we're going to Salt Lake City, Utah. They're not messing around. They're going to do 2 or 3 stores all at once. But yeah, to your point, it has to be strategic, and you have to also just have a relationship. Like my team has a history with our vendor partners. And so they believe us when we say what our opening schedule is going to be. They're giving us pricing tiered ahead of schedule. They're giving us slotting and availability of distribution ahead of schedule, but that's because we have a history, and we also have a very significant company that can back that up, right? We have the resources to back that up. Everybody's betting, everybody's in the game, right? Everybody's got their chips on the table for Pepper Lunch's success. And, you know, that gives us the freedom, that gives us a lot of opportunity to say yes.
Couple questions. Onion rings.
Oh, they're amazing. They're so good. Actually, best onion rings in a fast casual QSR I've ever had in my life. They're actually really good. I'm ecstatic.
I'm an onion ring freak, dude. You got onion rings?
So here's the funny thing. Here's the interesting thing.
There's a story about the onion rings. There's got to be a story.
So our U.S. franchisee came here alone, right? They're our Australian franchisee. They came here and they opened the 5 stores inside of 19, 20 months. And because of America, they said, hey, you know, and we allow regionalization. So about 80% of the menu is the same around the world, but a good 20-25% of it is hyper-localized flavor profile, ingredients, you know, makeup of dishes, right? Still done in the authentic Japanese style and way, but there's really license there to sort of personalize to the market. And so these guys said, well, Americans love fried stuff, so we're going to put a fryer in the restaurant. Oh, God. And we're going to do onion rings, French fries, and sweet potato wedges, not skinny, soggy sweet potato fries. And they're all incredibly good. So when I got asked to, we started as a consulting engagement before I was asked to insource in leadership. And at that first 3-4 months of looking at the brand, looking at the sales, looking at it, I with no intelligence, I looked and said, no way that $32 steak is selling. It's going to have to go most likely. And no way people are buying French fries at Pepper Lunch. Like, why would they ever, right? And talk about 32 years of experience going right down the toilet. We sell a lot of $32 ribeyes, a lot, enough to keep it on the menu. I'll just say that. And we sell between $80,000 and $100,000 a year in 3 fried side items. And so it's like, well, can't take that away, can we?
Nope, so don't touch that.
They're really good. So that was the big savior, is that they're really good. And I had an epiphany a few weeks ago, about 6 weeks ago. We were doing our photo shoot. We do one photo shoot a month, video photo shoot. And I love our curry sauce. I don't like curry generally, but ours is a Japanese brown curry. So it's a little sweeter, a little saltier. Love it, right? And I don't even remember the exact story, but basically we were going to take photos of the onion rings, and, you know, we're taking these photos for social media and stuff. And it just dawned on me that the sauce was sitting there, and I was like, wonder what we could do with these onion rings. They're really boring. Like, French fries are boring on a photograph by themselves. What can we do to liven up this? And I saw the sauce sitting there, and I put it in the shot, and I took an onion ring and I dipped it, and it gave us this amazing, like, thick double drip. It's like, it looks Photoshopped. It looks, and it's not, it just was freeze framed. And I took, we all took a bite of it, and we're like, we have a new menu hack item. We have a secret menu item. Come to Pepper Lunch, order French fries, sweet potato fries, or especially the onion rings, and get a $1.89 side of our curry sauce for dipping. I just changed your life. Trust me, wherever you are, run to a Pepper Lunch right now. It is insane. It is so good. So accidental, one of those moments. Nobody ever planned it. Nobody thought it up. No chef in a kitchen in a office building said, let's dip our food in curry sauce. It just was spontaneous. It was awesome.
Cool.
Beer batter. They're really good. Thick cut. They're really good.
Like, honestly, you got to look at Calgary. it's just, like, everything that you have.
Always like, I'll take some of that.
Let's well, go.
Yeah, I want that.
Well, I think even just looking at
onion rings. So,
Troy, I'm going to be with you in Vegas. I'm going to definitely do that when I'm in Vegas.
Oh, everybody's doing it. We're going to get like a group shot, because whenever the conferences are in Vegas, I do open houses and I bring everybody over. Yeah. I get a Sprinter limo and run a shuttle and bring everybody over. We fill the house with all of our friends and family and industry colleagues, right? And we have a good time. And I'm telling you, everybody's going to be dipping onion rings. We're gonna blast the social media internet. Instagram is going to explode with dip your onion ring in curry sauce. Indian restaurants are going to be like, what is going on with this curry dipping? You know, why is everybody dipping their curry all of a sudden?
What's his name? Sean was in an Indian restaurant that you should get him to.
Dip in curry. Dip the naan in curry. Dip something in the curry.
Man. Yeah, exactly. Dip something in there.
Mexican restaurants could be getting requests for curry instead of salsa. Like, let's go.
I love it. So, Troy, I have a question for you, because I follow you a lot and I see all these amazing posts. You're engaged in social media. You're engaged in content creation at an amazing level. You're out there. How important is that to you and to your brand that you have? Because you have Pepper Lunch, you have this brand, you're growing it. You know, like I always say, you know, Sean's kind of leading us through these waters as well, but you're doing amazing at what you're doing when it comes to content creation. How important is that to you and to your business?
Everything I learned from Gary Vee, but everything I do because Sean tells me to do it. I mean, that's the end. That's the truth. Sean's in my ear every day, definitely a couple days a week during our roundtable get-togethers. He's showing me what works by doing it himself. I've been following Gary since 2016. I'm a fast learner, but a slow mover. Like I understand it, I believe it, but I just don't act on it that quick. So what you're seeing is like 7-8 years of like being bombarded in the brain, but it's everything. Like, you know, and to the point of Gary Vee, like, I'm ecstatic. His new book is going to be called Day Trading Attention. Best title of a book ever. Like that's the answer. Now more than ever. It has been for forever, but it has been on digital and social for years. And we're all just really understanding. Like we're all just starting to really realize. And TikTok is the cause of all of it. And now TikTok Shop, like now it's another level of insanity of attention and being able to make money and do stuff. So yeah, I'm all in on it. So I'm going to live and die by it. Like my career is going to be made or broken on putting all in, like all in. My first hire was my digital technology.
That was the other day, right?
Well, that's official, but he's been a contractor for a year and a half. But the first person I called after Mark Bailey, who's our COO, once this thing got going, was I called Jonathan. I said, dude, the most important thing is that we get digital and our technology back in right. I want funnels. You're going to build the website. The website's going to be fully like automated funnels, you know, UTM tracking. I want every ad QR code, UPC. I want everything on the planet tracked down to the source. I want to know where every customer and every franchise inquiry is coming from. And so we just built from the ground up digitally native. and you're just starting to see us, like, by the way, if you think you've seen a lot of my face and our brand, you haven't seen anything yet. We are 5X-ing last year's spend this year, and we're doing 80% of it in the first half of the year. So wow. we're really like 9X-ing our exposure this year over last year by doing it in a short upfront window to preload it. But I just put it together a team and we've been testing for a year. We tested every agency, every creator, every graphic artist, every animator we could get our hands on. And now we have a team. We put a team together. So the reality is the first department I built out was our creative and technology department that have to work hand in hand, because you can't do social, you can't do attention, you can't do ads if you don't have a way of capturing and tracking, right? So that's to tell you how important it is to me. That's the first people I hired. It's the first department we built. And now they're just starting. They're about 60 days in as a team full time. Nice. And man, they're getting ready to really just pump it out. So I'm ecstatic. Awesome. We joined short form video two, three weeks ago. We weren't on TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram Reels, Facebook Reels. We weren't doing short form video. We were doing static and graphics and animation and Reels. But we haven't done video. We're just starting to do video now.
I noticed that. And I have a question on that, is because a lot of restaurants are still doing, I call them snag pictures, just pictures and stuff like this. How like you're getting to video, is that hard or is it as easy as people? Hard. Is it super hard? Why is it super hard? Super hard?
Because it's a whole discipline in of itself. Like, it's a very specialized discipline. And so we're really lucky. We have this great new, we call her social media manager, but her job is, we say that because she's the community manager. So she's actually creating the videos or sourcing the videos, UGC from other creators, influencers, right? Ultra micro influencers from the region, where she's bringing them in, giving them free food, giving them $100 and getting, you know, 2-3 videos out of each one of them, something like that. But it's a full-time job. Like, at the end of the day, it's, she's still a student, but she's doing it. You know, I'd say she's spending 30 hours a week on it probably. But then there's the community management side, like to do all that work and then not, what you're going to see from us and what everybody needs to think about is making videos is not easy. Being creative, not easy. Riding trends, not easy. You got to always be on it. But then to do that and then not engage and build community is an absolute waste of time. It's you may as well put an ad on a park bench, you know, realtor, John Smith realtor, you know, it's the same shit. It's just a different delivery mechanism. Yeah. So the real important thing and what you're seeing us work our way up to is being at a point where we can actually build a relationship. And so our content is going to go from billboard to conversation to relationship. And ultimately what I want to do is build a brand that has a community. We want to have that cult sort of, you know, that raving fan, that just Disney-esque kind of person, right? That just like is all in on the brand and then evangelizes it, because that's the most powerful form of advertising. And it's 100%. also free at the end of the day, right? So that's where we're going, and it takes time. You got to work your way up to it. You got to find your footing. You got to find your voice. You got to find your image. We have no idea.
You're paving the road too, Troy. Like, you're paving it. You're paving it a little too at the same time.
You got to.
There's not many people doing this, right? So you're kind of leading the way.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm following a lot of people. I'll give the audience a tip, because people are like, yeah, okay, great. I barely have time to do my schedule on a weekly basis, right? The answer is all of the people you need are already inside your four walls. I'll guarantee you, if you have 20 employees and you sit them all down, buy them a sandwich and a soda, and you say to them, my name's Troy. I'm not your owner. I'm not your boss. I'm not your nothing. I just want to know. I'm curious, guys, gals, kids, right? Who in here has a TikTok channel and post regularly, right? Who in here has made any money in social media ever? Hands will go up, right? Who in here actually has a side job selling stuff on the internet? Half of those people are going to put their hands up. So the answer is, it is the new lifestyle, and it's just a part of normal existence for anybody under 25, I'd say today. So who you need is in your building. What you need is in your hands, Sean Walshef, right? Is all you need, right? I went and got an iPhone 15. You want to know why I upgraded to iPhone 15? Because the quality of the camera is like 3x better. So I was like, hey, if I'm going to be taking pictures and videos on the internet, I better have the newest phone. That's all. You know, $1,000, go get an iPhone. And then, you know, at the end of the day, what I do is like on TikTok, I have like 5 or 6 accounts on TikTok, all connected. And now 2 of them, I started a new one yesterday. One is to follow all my friends. I follow Monty and engage with his stuff, follow Sean, follow Jason, follow all these guys, right? Now my new one is I always want to have this anonymous account that nobody knows who it is. And all I do is follow restaurant content. I just search for and follow restaurants. Any restaurant doing social media, I'm on, especially TikTok.
Anonymity is gone.
What's that?
You blew it, Troy.
Is gone. You just told everybody.
Well,
you don't know what his name is.
The answer to the test is already there. I don't need to sit around all night and come up with cute ideas of how to make a video.
I said, Troy. I said that TikTok is the marketing dream for marketers.
Yeah.
You can also find new recipes, new ideas. Go to TikTok.
Yeah.
And last year, TikTok surpassed Google as the number one search engine in the world. Like, what else do you need to know? And by the way, you don't need to be on 99 platforms. Yes, there's 7 or 8. Yes, you should be on all of them. But if you're on anything, it should be TikTok, YouTube, and your Google should be set up and optimized. Your Google My Business account, your page, your search, everything, your name, you should own it. You should pay for your name and keywords and all that hashtags. But where are people looking for answers? Those are the 3 platforms: Google, YouTube, TikTok. TikTok's the number one search engine in the world. So, you know, I had to hear that before I ever learned it. I bought my earbuds because I was like, oh, I bought this microphone set. I was like, well, where else can I listen to 50 people demonstrate this microphone for me and tell me how it sounds on the other end of my computer? So I listened to a bunch of shit on TikTok. And then when I went to buy at Christmas, I needed new earbuds. I have 3 sets of earbuds with one. I have 1 earbud for 3 sets, so I need a new set. So I treated myself at Christmas as nice earbuds. I listened to like 20 videos of the guy going, this is what the Apple sounds like. This is what the Sony sounds like. The answers are right here.
I did the same thing when I was doing this podcast and we're building the podcast. Same thing. I've watched more bloody freaking YouTube videos on how to do podcast and the proper way and how to, you know, optimize your YouTube channel and everything.
Just got to put in the time.
Hey, Dominic.
It's a marathon.
Remind Jay it's not a podcast.
It's not a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I said another podcast.
Oh, okay.
I have 3 of the top 10.
I thought he almost said this podcast. I thought you caught it.
Monty caught it.
There's a $1,000 bounty. $1,000.
I love it. I love everything you say, Troy, on that because I think in Canada, and trust me, Canadian people, please don't grill me for this, but I think we're a little bit behind you guys down in the U.S. You guys are leading us when it comes to the social media engagement, let's say, or creating content.
Well, it's not the society's fault, though, Jay. I mean,
it's adoption. We're just a little bit.
It's the platforms, right? It actually surprises me when you hear, oh, TikTok's now in Argentina. You're like, now? It's been around for 5 years. It's just now in Argentina or whatever, right?
We still don't have a lot of features you do on TikTok in the U.S. We don't have it in Canada.
Yeah.
Right? We still don't have your features.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, there's still a lot of limitations. It's probably the government, Dominic.
The
government does limit. That's why they're just now in Argentina because the government wouldn't let them in.
Yep.
You want Dominic to get fired up? You just say the G word.
I heard that on Sean's show too. Yeah.
He got fired up. Look at you.
Hey, Dominic. I actually could give you a stroke if we started talking about laws in California. So you would literally explode or melt or die. Like you wouldn't believe it.
I would be a battle from up here and just shake my head at how such ridiculousness happens. It just blows me away. And then, you know, I think the bigger thing to all of that is states and governments would wonder, well, why are they pulling out from here? Why are they not going to do business here? Why don't they come here? Why don't they come and employ people here? You know, and instead of looking inwards to say, how are we going to make it easy for people to come here? How are we going to make it easy for people to live here? How are we going to make people that make $15 an hour afford the place instead of, you know, raising their taxes and sending money and, you know, all the crazy stuff that government does. At the end, the government.
If I lived somewhere outside California, I could afford a freaking Ferrari. I mean, my life is like, you know what it is to, you know, do anything. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I left California in 2000, and the door did not hit my ass.
Yeah,
I ran. I saw what I mean. Man, when I lived in Santa Monica, I was 5 miles from the beach. I was a GM for Wolfgang Puck, and I felt like I was living in poverty. Yeah. Just the money you have to spend for the things that are just part of life. And I don't think, you know, I don't know if the governor of California is listening or not, but Gavin, I'm sure you know economics, and I'm sure you know, QSR's $20 minimum wage is only going to raise the price of the burger, which is most often eaten by minimum wage people, which is then going to cost them more than what they got in an increase in money. So do the math, bro. But that's my little rant.
You opened the can there, buddy.
Just get warmed up. I can tell.
I'm not going to go after. I think the reality is, I think in anything, like just, you know, in anywhere, anything, is that when look what happened with Troy, the concept comes from Japan, correct?
Yep.
And they're doing everything semi manually, and they're doing all their prep in the kitchen. And when you allow business, but innovators, let's say, and give them a problem, it can get fixed really quick. And business most often can do it way better than government. Government
always
anything.
Private sector can always do it better.
Well, my thing is, you can do it twice as fast for half the money, and it's going to be at least two times better. Yeah. So everything is in business's favor. But businesses that abuse their employees are not going to stay in business.
Right.
There's just, it ain't going to happen. Right. So back to what you said about engaging your employees on the, hey, come and help us with the videos. The podcast we did a few months ago with Monty, we talked about exactly that, about, hey, look around you, because you've got some people in your building right now that are not only that can help you, but want to help you. They want to do it.
You know what I've heard three times from three different independent store owners in the last couple of weeks, that I keep seeing posts, or they keep telling me they're looking for help. They're struggling to find help, particularly a skilled position here or there. And I'm like, wow, really? You're still like, and he's like, yeah, I got the great guy. He's doing great thing. We love him. He's awesome. I offer him more hours. And he literally, I've heard this three different times this month. He doesn't want the hours. He's got a side gig on the internet. He's selling products. He's making shit. He's trading, day trading. He's a affiliate marketer, whatever. He's like,
he's got one of these, Troy.
Yeah. He's got his own product. He's launching something. Basically, his 4 day a week, 8 hour, 10 hour, you know, job is enough to meet the need, meet the basic requirements of life. And then he's betting on himself for that extra hours to launch and make and build and create, right? Or whatever that is. And it literally, all three of them were, he's got a gig on the internet and he doesn't need my extra day of work. Actually, my extra day of work is burdensome to his ambitions and capabilities. And by the way, I have an employee who does not need the money I pay him. He has automated things going on the internet because he's a genius and he makes money. He's here because he's passionate about working with me and this new brand and building a system and building a company. So he's here for the passion. He's not here for the money, because he has, in the hours he's not working for me, he's making many X what he makes working for me. But he wants to do what he wants to do, and this happens to be the thing he wants to do. So I'm very fortunate to have him, right? That's the way it's going. You need to build a family, a community, a central unit, a nucleus of people that want to do that thing you're doing together and make a difference in whatever it is you're serving, whatever community you're involved in or whatever. Yes, you got to have a meaningful business. It can't just be transactional. Numbers went down in McDonald's, right? Not everything lasts forever. Not everybody's at the top of the mountain forever. I was just going to say the Fortune 500 looks very different today than it did 10, 20, 30,
this 40. Sure does.
Every 10 years, the Fortune 500 shuffles, and there's a whole group of companies at the top that were not there 10 years earlier.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's not even just it's not even a younger demographic anymore. I did the rising grind on the side of running a restaurant for 3 years, and it finally paid off to where I could do this on my own now. But it takes that idea, and I had the same thought that you just said, Troy, that a lot of younger people have. It's like, why am I going to rise and grind for somebody else's dream, for somebody else's profit, when the capabilities on the internet now allow you to build a substantial business? Yes.
You can certainly make up $8, $12, $15 an hour, no doubt.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I mean, problem for us who need employees and need help and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we should wrap up here because it is getting late for Monty. Monty, I know your bedtime soon.
Monty can go for hours, Jay. He could probably make sure we were all in bed and tucked in, and then they'd probably still go for another couple hours.
I still have work to do tonight.
Yeah.
My computer still says 6:13 p.m. I'm terrified. I don't know what's going on.
Well, Troy, it has been an absolute pleasure. Jeez, I can't even talk. Marbles again tonight, but it's an absolute pleasure meeting you.
Hey, and thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Very inspiring. I tell you, I definitely think Canada needs more up here.
We're coming. I promise.
You gotta look at Calgary. Yeah, you come to Calgary, we'll give you a tour.
You guys help me find a multi-unit operator who's looking for a new thing to diversify their portfolio. We'll be right there. I'll be on a plane right away.
Dominic knows. We got a couple.
There you go.
And honestly, it's just, I love hearing what you're doing and all these things. It's inspiring. It really is. Because I think Canada's just slightly behind what you guys are doing down there for other reasons, but also just we need more people to inspire us to do these kind of things and do what you're doing up here, because it really does help. And surprisingly, a lot of people will listen to this and listen to those messages and do it and try it. And I just think, especially on the content side, I preach this. Dominic knows I say this every day. I believe every restaurant needs a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the last purest ways that we have right now to get the content out there. And you can create content nonstop and you can have a blast. Actually, we just launched, secured our first restaurant podcast. It's a full-blown restaurant podcast starting in March.
Awesome.
And once a week, we'll be doing shows from their floor. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And honestly, I think it's the first one in Alberta for a restaurant to have its first podcast. I think it might be up there in the first one in Canada. But how long have I been saying that, Dominic? For like the last year and a half.
Now, right? Make sure they do a podcast, not whatever this is, because this is not a podcast. Whatever this is, you do this.
This is just.
Hey, speaking of podcasts, you want some breaking news that's not well known?
Yes.
Absolutely.
What's the breaking news?
I too am starting a podcast.
Did I text you that? Did I say that to you?
No.
I don't. Is it an extension of Troy under a tree, or is it something different?
Yes, what's that?
Is it an extension of Troy under a tree, or is it something different?
Yeah, kind of is. So it's the Pineapple Perspective with Troy Hooper, sponsored by Pepper Lunch, right? So it's really a Pepper Lunch podcast. Draped in a hospitality conversation. So I've always wanted to do it. And thankfully, Pepper Lunch is giving us that opportunity to sponsor it and put it forth. But to your point, though, right, it ultimately The goal is to talk to multi-unit operators about multi-unit operators' issues and needs and things, and talk to industry people like all of you guys. So I'll be inviting all of you on, but you know, is talk to guys like you about you know, what restaurant people need to know. And we have a specific thesis around really focusing on every business is a hospitality business, you know, and what does that mean to you, no matter if you're a SaaS company or a distributor or, you know, your Ecolab, what does hospitality mean and how do you bring that to life? So that's the sort of foundation of it. But at the end of the day, like, we're there to be the show, not the commercial, as Sean says.
Yeah. I love it. That's a great way to end. Thank you so much, Monty. Always a pleasure, Monty. We got a lot of work, Monty, to work on your book coming out too.
Yeah. It's so close.
See, that's next. There are all these guys doing books ahead of
time. You got a book, too? You got a couple of books?
Actually, a couple years, probably.
You better. You can write a good one.
I got to wait for Sean and Monty and Chip. Well, Chip got his out. So Chip's book's out. Everybody should get Chip Close's book.
I decided to sneak out a second workbook, ebook and workbook before I put that out.
Chips. So. I always carry Chips with me right here. And then I was going to say, I always have, I don't know if you've read Matt Rolfe's book.
I haven't yet. Yeah, I am following him, but I haven't read the book yet.
It's really good too. You can listen to the audio. I did the audio book for him and I was just getting into doing audio books and it's so funny. I didn't know how hard it was. And I said, hey, Matt, yeah 2 weeks easily. Dude, it took like 3 months.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. But when you listen to it, so when you listen to audio, and whoever does audiobooks, hats off to you, because it's crazy shit hard. Because I'm not a good reader, right? Yeah. It wasn't the forte in the old school. So I'm reading and I'll be like, oh, fuck. So if you listen to his audio, you can actually hear the days that I'm kind of cranky and days that I'm happy because my voice tone changes. And then people are listening to like, Jay, were you pissed off that day? Because you're like, like, it's not consistent like a year. And then I got like near the end, I was getting like, I'm going to have a little fun now because I'm a creative guy. I can't just keep in the same lane. I got to have fun now. So I'm like, well, I'm going to make this like a storybook, right? It's a business book. Why am I going to make it like a story? So it was like getting excited and lower and higher. And, you know, so anyways, if you do get a chance, it's a great book.
That's awesome.
So I just want to thank you, Monty. It's a blast. Dominic, always a pleasure. And we're on tour tonight, Dominic, with we have a guest.
We have some special guests tomorrow, Jay. It's going to be awesome.
We have a special guest again tomorrow.
Yeah. It's going to be cool.
And then another one on Friday.
Yeah. So cool.
We're packed. Anyways, this is
not a podcast. You do this every night?
Monday to Friday. Hey, man, you don't get three top shows in Canada.
No
the top
kidding.
Just sitting around.
Awesome.
I want to thank you all. Good.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Everyone else, bye-bye. Have a great evening.